Right now, I'm going to read to you a short report that was posted to the DC Indie Media website, dc.indiemedia.org. Conscientious objector Catherine Jasinski sentenced for refusal. This was by Matthew Smucker, posted May 23rd, 2006. First female conscientious objector sentenced for refusing deployment to Afghanistan. Fort Benning, Georgia. Army National Guard Specialist Catherine Jasinski received a bad conduct discharge last week and was sentenced to 120 days confinement after pleading guilty to the charge of refusal to obey a legal order. She was acquitted of more serious charge of missing movement by design. With 53 days already served on Fort Benning and 20 days off for good behavior, Ms. Jasinski has 47 days of confinement remaining. On November 17, 2005, Jasinski made a public statement of conscientious objection on the eve of her scheduled deployment to Afghanistan. 18 months after filing, the Army denied her application for discharge. She was then court-martialed for refusing to train with weapons. Jasinski's superiors testified that they believed in the sincerity of her conscientious objection claim, and the judge noted that he was convinced of the same. Aiden Delgado and Camilo Mejia, members of Iraq Veterans Against the War, attended Ms. Jasinski's trial to support her. They described the atmosphere of the courtroom as initially tense, but said that Jasinski's powerful, heartfelt testimony changed the tone of the room. Iraq Veterans Against the War supports the right of every soldier to follow their conscience, said Delgado. As the first woman GI to publicly take a stand against this war and to declare herself a conscientious objector, Catherine's actions are very significant. She is a fine example of a young person standing up for her beliefs. Ms. Jasinski is feeling triumphant and happy to have resolution. After completing her sentence, she will return to school at the University of Texas, Austin, and continue her work with the newly founded Austin GI Rights Hotline. Catherine is being held in a county jail in southwest Georgia and may be transferred soon, so please send urgent letters of support to Catherine Jasinski, Harris County Jail, P.O. Box 286, Hamilton, Georgia, 31811. That's Catherine Jasinski, Harris County Jail, P.O. Box 286, Hamilton, Georgia, 31811. There's a MySpace.com website, MySpace.com/FreeCatherine, that has been set up by her supporters. Catherine herself does not have access to the internet, but the website on MySpace is being updated by the Free Catherine Support Committee. To receive email updates on her case, send a request to freecatherine@mutualaid.org. You're tuned to Freak Radio on 101.1 FM. This is the Indie News Wire Show.
Throw your uniform away now. Burn the flag above your head. Toss your medals to the wind now. Before you're victoriously dead.
Immigration, quote, reform. On Thursday, the Senate voted 67-31 to pass S-2611, the Comprehensive Immigration Reform Bill, along with a list of amendments, many of which contain onerous enforcement provisions that erode immigrant access to the courts and to due process of law and place severe hardship on immigrants and their friends, families, and employers. One particularly harsh amendment would make English the, quote, official language of the United States. However, the bill contains provision of both ag jobs, which would allow a path to legalization to many immigrant agricultural workers, and the DREAM Act, which would allow qualified students who are brought to the United States as undocumented immigrant children to pursue higher education in the U.S., and allows for the implementation of a 3-year guest worker program. Among the amendments that were defeated is Feinstein's amendment that asked for total amnesty for people living in the United States as undocumented workers. Most importantly, the bill opens up a path to permanent legal status for many of the 12 million undocumented immigrants in the country. Now begins the difficult task of harmonizing it with the disastrous House Bill H.R. 4437 and the Border Protection, Anti-Terrorism, and Illegal Immigration Control Act of 2005.
And you're tuned into the Indy Newswire program here at 101.1 FM. And we're going to give you an update on the situation at the South Central Farm. This is the blurb posted on la.indymedia.org. Until the farm is secure. May 27, 2006. What does it mean to be camping under three people living in a tree? It's not exactly inspiration. The farm takes care of that. It's more than symbolic. Julia, John, Joan, and now Daryl are really risking life and limb, especially if the sheriffs try to shake them loose. It's kind of like having odd but utterly charming neighbors, people who live their unusual lives with such self-assurance with what should be idiosyncratic makes utter sense. It's an admiration and proud friendship that you know you couldn't possibly explain to your uptight parents. But even if you can't explain them, you should defend them against all comers. The sturdy arms of the walnut tree appear to embrace the new denizens, tethered to safety lines as they climb from branch to branch, sharing the 3x5 wooden slats that serve as bed and perch. John Quigley, Daryl Hanna, and Julia Butterfly Hill fill their day chatting with the groundlings when they're not making phone calls to rouse support for the farm. Buckets carry food, waste, and charged cell phones up and down. The tree, now known as the heart of the farm, barely stirs. A bunch of flies came to visit John when he first settled in. He didn't disturb them, commenting only that they were checking out this big new bird. In the winter of 2002, Quigley sat in Old Glory, chaining himself to the Santa Clarita Valley oak for 2.5 months until developers agreed to move it to a preserve. John's the quiet one, hidden behind branches when the media arrives, but working the phones nonstop. Joan Baez was the first celebrity tree sitter, spending 2 days and nights in the tree and bringing international focus to the farm and tending her celebrity status to protect the farm. Occasionally, crooning from on high, Baez caught the media's and finally the LA Times' attention for the farm. When she moved on, environmentalist and Hollywood darling Daryl Hanna took her place. Hanna, disturbingly better known for her films, is an organic vegetarian and animal rescuer who drives a bio El Camino and lives off-grid on a solar and biodiesel farm when she's not on tour promoting biodiesel conversion. It's the fourth day of tree sitting at the farm, but the 12th day of Julia Butterfly Hill's water-only prayer fast for the survival of the farm. On Wednesday, when she first climbed into the tree, she was asked how long she intended to stay. Without a beat of hesitation, she pronounced, "Until the farm is secure." Hill is world-renowned for spending 2 years sitting in a tree she named Luna in Humboldt County until 3 acres of ancient redwoods were preserved from logging interests. If the tree is the heart of the farm, Julia has become its soul. She's disturbingly thin now, but still energetically traveling around in the tree and engaging visitors and residents below. Her Northern California manager described her as Gandhi-esque. But that's too grandiose for the playful, centered, peaceful, earth-loving sprite, who, this morning, as the groundlings waited for the sheriffs, said simply, "Just be calm. Be happy to be in this place." A few minutes later, she added, "I'm glad it didn't rain last night." For whatever reason, the sheriffs didn't appear this morning. That was posted by Leslie Radford on Saturday, May 27th, titled Until the Farm is Secure. You can read that and other updates on the South Central Farm situation at la.indymedia.org. And right now, we're going to hear a short interview done by KPFA Flashpoints correspondent Alejandro Reyes, who's down at the South Central Farm, and brings us a brief interview on the situation there.
Atenco, Sur Central, la tierra es del pueblo. Atenco,
Sur Central,
la tierra es del pueblo. Atenco,
Sur Central, la tierra es del pueblo.
Y sigue rápido.
This is Alejandro Reyes. We're here at South Central Farm, and with us to talk about the situation is Rosa Romero. Hi, Rosa.
Hi, how are you doing, Lee?
Good. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about the background of the farm and what's going on here right now?
So basically in the 1980s, Ralph Horowitz owned this land, and the city took it under eminent domain to build a trash incinerator. Actually, the local community at the time fought it because they didn't think that a trash incinerator was the best way to use this space. They thought there was enough pollution in this area. So they fought it, and it lay dormant for a while. The 92 uprising happened, and they were trying to find ways in which they could increase the quality of life in South L.A. So the food bank, which is right across the street from the South Central Farm, saw this plot of land, and people were already kind of growing their own food here. It was an empty lot that they were growing nopales and some tomatoes. And so they said, well, why don't we just, you know, make it a community garden? So they invited the community in, they cleaned the land, they brought in some soil to make it fertile again, and they divided it up for families. And basically families who qualified for the same low-income requirements as welfare were allowed to grow food for their families. And so let's talk 10 years later, about 3 years ago, they got an eviction notice on their door. And they didn't understand why. They thought that, you know, they were here under a contract with the city to grow food for their family. And so they did some investigation. And what they found out was Ralph Horowitz was mad that it was taken under eminent domain and wasn't used as a trash incinerator and was instead used for a community garden. He thought that he had first right to the land. So he went to court three times, and three times Judge Crispo ruled that he had no right to the land. But he did. He threatened to sue the city. So basically, the city attorney advised the city that they shouldn't face this lawsuit. And so in a backroom deal, they sold this public land that was for public use in a backroom deal for $5 million. And it was even more land than he originally owned, knowing that it was well worth over about $16 million. And so basically what happened was we have some really good lawyers that stalled this. And for 3 years, the farmers continued to till the land and have grown crops for their families. And they exhausted all of their legal fronts. And so this past Tuesday, they were told that Ralph Horowitz was able to ask the sheriffs to forcefully remove the farmers and their supporter from the land. And so that's when we ran on red alert. We called everyone to come out, come for an encampment on the land. And that, so Julia Butterfly came over to live in the trees. So did John Quigley. And so did Daryl Hannah. We had different celebrities stop by in and out, all voicing their opinion as why we should keep this green open space. And the communities come out. And as you can see tonight, we have at least, we have, I don't know, like 500 people that's coming. We have about, every night we have at least 80 people in our encampment. We take shifts, we do foods, we do security, cleanup. You know, it's become a real community where everyone's really working hard to save this place.
And what's the situation right now? Has the police actually tried to accomplish the eviction? Is there any plan, specific date? What's going on right now?
Basically, it's been a process of intimidation. There's been LAPD as well as the sheriff circling overhead as well as in squad cars.
How many families are living here?
There's 350 families. They each till their own plot and they make food for their family. This isn't, you know, your little weekend garden project. These people are growing serious food. You'll see so many heirloom crops, lots of corn, a lot of native crops to Mexico like chipolín, huasincle, that you don't really find in the store. So there's everyone's really proud of their crops, and there's also a transgenerational phenomenon that happens here. You have grandparents working with their grandkids and learning. The first time I came here, I got a garden tour from a 6-year-old and a 13-year-old, and they identified every single plant and told me their medical uses and how to cook them. And so you can really see that there's a value to this land that these children don't learn in school.
And this is right in the middle of Los Angeles, and it has also an environmental value, I would imagine, right?
Yeah, it's right in the middle. If you look around, it's all gray buildings, it's all industry, it's all warehouses. And it serves as a carbon sink. It serves as a beautiful, green, peaceful oasis in the middle of our urban squalor. And what's really sad is that the developer wants to build yet another warehouse in this blighted community. And if you look across the street, there's like 3 abandoned warehouses. There's no need for that here, but there is a need for having food that feeds families.
Now, there's a concert going on right now, which is not only in support of you and to avoid the eviction of the farmers, but also in protest against the repression that took place in Mexico in San Salvador Atenco. What is the relationship between those two events?
Well, actually, before we even knew that we would be in an encampment, we chose to sponsor this concert because it was talking about La Otra Campaña, talking about the use of grassroots communities to empower themselves and their families and their communities. So we're here because we see the connections. We see that farmers are being displaced by large corporations, that families and communities are being displaced by things such as Walmart. What's really interesting is what happened in Atenco with the Walmart. It's the same thing that's happening here. It looks like the highest bidder for this land is a Walmart. They want to build a warehouse here.
And now, a short interview with Daryl Hanna at the South Central Farm. In this interview, Daryl tells of a conversation between Julia Butterfly Hill via cell phone atop the tree she is encamped in and the developer Ralph Horowitz, who wants to bulldoze that tree and the farm that surrounds it. Daryl is also part of the tree sit and encampment and plans to stay until the farm is secure.
I'm here with Daryl Hanna, and she was part of a conversation that Julia Butterfly Hill had with the developer Ralph Horowitz. Daryl, can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, I wasn't actually part of it. I was eavesdropping on it.
Okay, well, what do you got?
On the platform when Julia was talking to him. But, basically he wants to be acknowledged for... he was going to donate 2 of the 14 acres as a soccer field, and he wants to be acknowledged for that, and he feels that he's given enough, and that, every month that he waits, he has had legal expenses, of course, so has the community, and so he's tired of waiting, and he's furious, and he doesn't want to come down on the price. He feels that he's a businessman, and he needs to make money. How he needs to make over $11 million from one of the 5th poorest communities in the city is mind-boggling to me, but that's his perspective, and I understand that he has to make money, but I don't think he needs to make so much money, and I think that's where we run into problems when we're fundraising, because a lot of people don't want to pad the pockets of a developer. That's why we've been able to raise $6 million, which it will pay him back the money he put out, plus some interest. But no, people have a hard time getting their head around the notion that they are just giving money to some wealthy developer. But that's where it stands right now, and he's pretty livid.
Oh, I see. So do you think Julia was able to make any progress with him negotiating?
Julia is just so amazing. I mean, she kept her calm the whole time. He was screaming at her. I could hear him over the phone. And, she was just calm and collected the whole time and constantly acknowledged him and, thanked him for what he was willing to do and give. But, I don't know that it, I don't know what the results will be.
So this is day 4 of the encampment. How many days have you been up in the tree?
I've been here since the last week, actually, and I came back. I had to go to New York for a farm sanctuary benefit, and then I just came right back. And so I've been here the whole time. I haven't left since we started camping out.
And you're planning to stay here for the duration?
Yeah, I plan to stay here for the duration.
Well, thanks so much.
And hopefully for the resolution. That's what I want to stay here for, the resolution and the positive outcome that this place gets to remain.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
No, the doctors didn't tell you that you were dying. They just collected their money and sent you on your way. But you knew all along, went on pretending nothing was wrong. You said, I will keep my focus till the end. And in the journal you kept by the side of your bed, you wrote nightly an aspiration of developing as an author, confessing childhood secrets, of dressing up in women's clothes, compulsions you never knew the reasons to. Will everyone you ever meet or love be just a relationship based on a false presumption? Despite everyone you ever meet or love, in the end, will you be alone as the disease spread slowly through your body, pumped by your heart to the tips of your arms and your legs? Your greatest fear was that your mind wouldn't last, because fancy and alertness would be the first things to fade as your hair thinned, as the weight fell off, as your teeth blackened, as the lesions spotted your skin, as you fell to your knees in the center of the stage, as you offered witness to mortality in exchange for the ticket price, as the light blended in to the continuing noise, as our hope was finally lost. Adrenaline carried one last thought to fruition. Let this be. Let this be the last song. Let this be the end. Let all be forgiven.
I'm going to give you an update about what's going on with Greenpeace's campaign. Earlier, I gave you an update about Forest Ethics campaign with Victoria's Dirty Secret. And I mentioned they're part of a coalition of environmental groups that are working on paper issues, and Greenpeace is working on one also. They have been working on a campaign against Kimberly-Clark. Kimberly-Clark Corporation owns Kleenex. They own Huggies diapers, I believe. They also own the brand Scott Tissues, that a lot of toilet paper is made from that brand. And Kimberly-Clark also is another guilty corporation that has been clear-cutting forests in our country and in other countries. And the majority of their both Kleenex and their paper products comes straight from virgin timber and virgin fibers. They've been confronted about this before, but they say that they like the product that comes from straight from virgin timber and forests. And they have been unwilling up to this point to go to recycled. It's too bad. However, this campaign has gotten some new life recently with the revelation that Sensenbrenner, who is the sponsor of the evil legislation that has spurred the immigrant power movement in the last several months, H.R. 4437, the author of this is one of the primary beneficiaries of Kimberly Clark's campaign donations, and I believe he's also related to owners of the company. So immigrants' rights have endorsed a boycott against Kimberly Clark, and they're asking people to join and boycott all Kimberly Clark products. This brings a lot of energy to the campaign to boycott these products, not only for environmental reasons, but for humanitarian reasons. This is a bad company, and they need to be boycotted. And that's what's up with that. They're also doing another campaign that I just wanted to mention really quickly. If you're a business or an organization and you want to help support this, you can join something called the Forest 500. You can get download a kit where you can sign up and be a business or an organization that pledges not to use any Kimberly Clark products. And you'll get a little symbol that says you're part of the Forest 500 and you're supporting not only our environment, but also immigrants. You can do that at www.greenpeace.org. Thanks.
And you are tuned to the Indie Newswire Show here on Freak Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM. www.freakradio.org. This is from indiebay.org. Stop the divine strike at the Nevada test site. Divine strike is the government's latest venture into the realm of broken treaties, state-sponsored terror, and the desecration of Mother Earth, a bunker-busting bomb that will be detonated this June in the Nevada desert. The Shundahai Network, founded by Shoshone Elder Corbin Harney, says this test could be a precursor to a nuclear strike against Iran with massive civilian casualties. The Divine Strike test, a test sponsored by the Defense Threat Reduction Agency, or DTRA, is a detonation of a 700-ton buried heavy ammonium nitrate fuel oil charge above a tunnel structure. The DTRA reports that the main purpose of the test is to study ground shock effects on deeply buried tunnel structures. Environmental activists and analysts predict, however, that the test is a preparation for the development of new nuclear weapons. This affects all of us, but especially the Shoshone people downwind of the Nevada test site. Oral arguments were heard on May 25th and 26th at the Nevada District Court in Reno, Nevada. May 28th was declared an International Day of Action, and dozens of indigenous environmental justice and peace and disarmament organizations converged at the peace camp outside the Nevada test site near Mercury, Nevada, to protest the Divine Strike test scheduled for June 2nd, but now has apparently been postponed indefinitely. Now we're going to hear a little bit of audio from a video about the Divine Strike. Actually, we're going to hear that in just a couple minutes.
Growing up, I used to worry about the day they dropped the bomb.
Blow up my house, my dad and my mom.
Every time the sky would turn a funny shade of green,
I thought they'd drop the bomb.
Then the media told us not to worry anymore, that there wasn't any threat of a nuclear war. Everybody just forgot. Everybody just forgot about it.
I remember if I thought too much about it, I'd get real scared.
And now I'm glad that they told me not to.
What you
care.
Gotta keep in mind is that all the bombs are still there.
I bet one day we'll find out where we were
so scared.
You're tuned to the Indie Newswire program on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. We're here every Monday, 3 to 5 p.m., and we want to thank our departing guest, Hireth, for joining us today, bringing us some information. I think Bradley has some more on the Divine Strike situation.
Yeah, this is the update. This is from a great website that I've recently come across. It's called disarmamentactivist.org, disarmamentactivist.org. The National Nuclear Security Agency, NNSA, announced on May 26th that it is withholding its finding of no significant impact, the FONSI, for the massive Divine Strike high explosive test originally slated to be conducted at the Nevada test site on June 2nd. The NNSA press release announcing the FONSI withdrawal mentioned no new date for the test, which apparently has been delayed indefinitely. Divine Strike has sparked widespread opposition in the region, based in part on worries that it could mobilize radioactive materials at the site, which was used to conduct both above-ground and underground nuclear explosive tests for four decades. Many also oppose the test as unnecessary and provocative because government budgets and planning documents show that one of its main purposes is to simulate the effects of low-yield nuclear explosions on underground structures. The NNSA press release fails entirely to mention that Divine Strike would occur at a test range where the United States conducted the vast majority of its nuclear tests. 100 above ground tests and over 800 underground tests. Quote, this action is being taken to clarify and provide further information regarding background levels of radiation from global fallout in the vicinity of the Divine Strike experiment. Atmospheric testing of nuclear weapons by several counties in the 1950s, countries in the 1950s and 1960s resulted in the dispersion of radioactive fallout throughout the Northern Hemisphere. The efforts of the Nevada site office are focused on explaining, in a means clearly understandable to all, what background radiation from this fallout means with respect to the contemplated Divine Strike experiment. So here they are stopping the test because of it could stir up radiation, but in their assessment, they don't mention that all the radiation got there because of nuclear tests done at that very site. They say it got there because of tests by other countries and of fallout from the skies. How ridiculous is that as a justification? Well, let's be happy that the test has been stopped for today, but let's not forget that they told us in the 1980s that there would be no more testing at the Nevada test strike, and people were silly enough to believe them then, so let's not take our government for anything that they say. Here's a brief explanation. This was up in San Francisco, looking specifically at the role of Bechtel in Divine Strike. So Bechtel is managing the Nevada test strike until July 1st, 2006, at least. So let's roll that. This is from IndieBay.org, posted by Bill Carpenter. Thank you.
Have you guys heard of Divine Strike? Raise your hand if you've heard of Divine Strike. So on June 2nd, the Department of Energy is planning to detonate 700 tons of ammonium nitrate and fuel oil. This is the largest above-ground chemical weapon that's been exploded out at the test site, and it's the first atmospheric test of a weapons-related thing since they did atmospheric nuclear weapons testing back in the 60s. So this is really bad. This is on native land. The United Nations Committee on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination just handed down a ruling that the United States must desist from any activities that violate the human rights of the Shoshone. So this June 2nd test is completely illegal. It's also going to send up a mushroom cloud of chemical pollution over Las Vegas, which is just 65 miles south of the test site. And it could also pick up a bunch of radioactive earth from the test site. So this is really scary. Nevada peace groups, Nevada indigenous rights groups, and environmental groups are really scared about this, and we're organizing a demonstration out at the test site on May 28th, and we're also asking for folks to vigil at Bechtel headquarters and offices around the country, because Bechtel is the manager of the Nevada test site until July 1st. So there will be folks out here on June 2nd vigiling, and I'll be in Nevada, but I'd be so grateful if you could join them. And we're going to stop this test. It's scheduled for June 2nd.
Maybe it's an
above-ground chemical test. So the reason for this test, which has come out from secret documents, is They want to get the research they need to design a nuclear weapon that can penetrate underground targets, like the so-called bunker buster. And they can't do an above-ground nuclear test, and they can't do this chemical test to get the data that they need to start developing these weapons.
TVs, Freak Radio 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. My name is Vinny, here with Bradley, hosting the Indie Newswire show Mondays, 3 to 5 p.m. And up next, a report back from Bartolissimo, posted on May 23rd to Santa Cruz Indie Media's website, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. On Wednesday, May 17th, the UC Regents held a meeting at UCSF. Students, workers, and unions were present, primarily in response to UC's plan to cut workers' pensions. The unions were united and unapologetic, cheering loudly as three California state senators, including Figueroa and Maldonado, called for President Dine's resignation. Here's the mixdown done by Bartolissimo at SantaCruz.indiemedia.org. I mean, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz.
So, hello, my name is Jeff Myers. I'm one of the vice presidents for AFSCME 3299. I represent the PCT, which is Patient Care Technical Employees statewide. I was at the Regents today with a coalition of unions. And basically, the meeting was around our pension. The UC is proposing to cut 8% of our pay to pay for our pension, and we're very upset about it. You know, the whole coalition is very upset about it, and they're there to represent ourselves and to let UC know that we're not going to stand by and just watch them take our benefits away and our pension away without a fight.
Thank you. I'm Senator Figueroa. And I'm really sad to be before you today. UC students work part-time jobs and up
for their college education. They work nights and weekends. They know how important an education is. And many of their families have also made many sacrifices. Some have mortgaged their homes. Many students take second jobs, and many of their family members take second jobs to meet their tuition costs. The students and working families of California are willing to make such great sacrifices because they have great faith. Unfortunately, their trust has been broken. Good morning, Chairman Farsi, members of the Board of Regents. I'm Senator George Leader Gloria Romero. Thank you for this opportunity to speak. I'm sure you know why I'm here. I'll get right to the point. Perhaps, who knows, maybe I will be offered $182,000. I am calling for the resignation of President Trump. And I also ask that you adopt a policy commencing immediately to bring sunshine to this scandal and to not go behind closed doors to further discuss this, to raise this issue in full public view, in full public sunshine, in order that we can have a resolution to this issue once and for all. So people know about it. Now we want to hear about it firsthand without having anything filtered through the media. There have been three independent audits, two legislative hearings, one legal opinion, and months of tenacious reporting by journalists. Enough is enough. President Dines, it's not easy for me to look you right to the whites of your eyes and say it, but I am saying it to you today. You have had sufficient opportunity to implement accounting reform and to clear up compensation abuses in the University of California. Indeed, it seems that the problems have flourished under your watch. Under Mr. Dines' leadership, the UC President's office has granted regular exceptions to policy, and there have been no consequences. A mockery, indeed, has been made of anything that is supposed to be a policy. Exception, by definition, should be rare, yet President Dines has made exception the rule. So how do I explain to the hardworking families that I represent in East Los Angeles, in the San Gabriel Valley, who want their kids to have an affordable, quality education so that student fees will not continue to rise as they have done so the last few years, in order that they can read about executives at UC having housing allowances? President Dines, in testifying earlier this year, stated that he takes full responsibility for what has occurred under his leadership. Suddenly, that full responsibility began to shift to the system tax problems. And as we used to say, you know what, Mr. Dines? You are the system. You are the man. The buck stops.
I think it went well in there today. I think the message was clear. I think the solidarity was clear also. I mean, I was really impressed with the union solidarity in the room, and people understand that we're going to fight together on this. The university's been trying to divide us and meet with us one union at a time, trying to see where we stand on the issues. And you know, every time they call a meeting with one union, we all show up to the meeting. So and this is just another showing that we're going to fight this together. So I'm really glad politicians are there in support of what we do. The political support that we have, it's been really good too, and we want to build that. So that's what I was trying to tell them too. You know, let's build that. Traditionally the unions don't like to talk to Republicans, but we really need to talk to Maldonado and just say, hey, keep pushing on that issue. And I know we don't see eye to eye on a lot of stuff, but.
And also to let them know that we still are outraged about the executive pay and bonuses and that they're getting and giving themselves when the low-wage workers are still trying to struggle to survive each day. So that's basically what it was about, and we had a great turnout, and I was so proud of all of the members and also the coalition with all the unions involved to just send a strong message to UC. So I want everybody to continue to fight and keep solidarity going, because we're going to win this. It's going to be a long struggle, but we're going to win eventually.
And thanks to Bartolissimo for that interesting mix, recorded from voices who attended the protest up at UCSF, demanding UC President Dines step down from his position on high. And we have about 15 minutes left in the Indy Newswire program. Up next, we're going to hear a report from KPFT Radio, the KPFT local news. Last week, Enron jurors spoke to reporters after issuing their verdict. This collage features some highlights from their comments. It was featured in reporter Lisa Cohen's coverage on the KPFT local news at 5 p.m. You can download this yourself at houston.indymedia.org.
I perform this duty as an American citizen with the privilege in this country of a trial by jury. I'm grateful to have served my country. Never fought in a foreign country, but I fought on this battleground for American justice.
What about Mr. Skilling? What kind of perception, what kind of impact did he have on you?
You know, in all honesty, in the very beginning of the trial, I actually admired both men. I thought they were brilliant. I think that they had a lot of talent, and they probably, for the most part, probably in most of their career did a lot of good and taught a lot of people good things. And it was sad to see that in the end it wasn't accomplished in a respectful manner. It was, you know, on having to hurt so many people to get there. But he seemed, all I can say, I guess he got caught up in it. And it's sad, you know, and I feel bad for his family.
Coming in here, I'm going to say I walked in and made up my mind I would come in open-minded. I don't think being from Houston bothered anything. Probably through 16 weeks of testimony, I would go home one night, a little swayed one direction, the next day cross or direct when it began, and it'd go the other direction. And I think we all felt through that. You felt like a ping-pong ball. The attorneys were very good. The testimony was very good. I don't really think I had made up my mind one way or another until we entered for deliberations. In my opinion, I think we listened and considered every witness. I think probably every witness's name came up at least once in the discussions. Some we gave more credibility to, some we didn't, but we figured they were all in there for a reason, defense or prosecution, but I think we considered every one of them.
I would say also add to that when in doubt, you know, with the credibility of a witness, we always went to those boxes of documents. And like I said before, the defense, we looked at those and we looked at the prosecutions. And I think in black and white, that just doesn't lie.
It came down to who do you believe? You said you didn't really believe Mr. Lay, felt he had a chip on his shoulder. What was it about Mr. Skilling you didn't believe? Anyone?
He was supposed to be a hands-on individual, is what we heard testimony in court. And it's hard to believe someone with their such a hands-on individual could not possibly know some of the things that were going on within the company.
When he got up on the witness stand and explained the VAR chart, we knew that he was involved in the company. He knew what VAR was just as much as Mr. Kaminsky that invented it. And so for us to look at he was not involved in the company or he wasn't hands, it's just not credible.
Mary Fletcher, the Chronicle again. I'm wondering how much it mattered to you that Mr. Lay sold a lot of his stock back to the company. I'm wondering from a few of you if that mattered to you at all.
Mary, very much.
Yes.
I think so.
I thought that was a disgrace to the ethics of the whole thing. It was just, it was horrible when people have all their money tied up and they can't touch it, and he's out paying his house payment and something in Vail. That was ridiculous.
Anybody else?
Yes, I would say that was very much just the character of person he was. He cashed out before the employees did, so.
To me, it just defined the word intent, I think, for many of us.
I would just hope that the SEC will take a look at this and maybe change some laws or have a little bit more overview so that the protection for shareholders is there, because there were no criminal charges against Mr. Lay on that. But it was a consideration in credibility when he talked about how much of himself was in this company and how much he felt the pain and the loss of every employee and shareholder.
I also hope, resulting in this, that all companies will, that this decision will make them more conscientious in how much is involved, not only employees, but shareholders across America, that those in charge have a responsibility. You know, there's a lot of losers in this. And this morning in the jury room, we had come to our decision. We, you know, there was obviously a winning side, but there's too much hurt here that if something good can come out, the companies will be more aware. They must be conscientious in all of the endeavors that they carry out.
And that was from Houston IMC, houston.indymedia.org, a collage of the jurors in the Ken Lay Enron corruption trial speaking to reporters after they reached their verdict. Bradley has a report from the Santa Cruz Take Back the Night action.
That's right. Take Back the Night 2006. On Thursday, May 18th, students at UC Santa Cruz held the annual Take Back the Night, starting with a rally at 6:30 p.m. in Baytree Plaza. There were speakers and live performance addressing issues such as prison violence, sterilization, borderline violence, and institutionalized patriarchy. After marching through the college, the colleges on the east side of campus, the march stopped outside the College 9 and 10 multipurpose room for performances by UCSC's Slam Poets team before making their way through the rest of the colleges. Finally ending up at Oaks, students ate food while listening to testimonials about gender-based violence. Take Back the Night has been organized at UC Santa Cruz since 1983, 2 years after the event was started in San Francisco. Traditionally an empowerment space for women only, this year's event, controversially, was open to all genders. And this was posted by Josh Sonnenfeld, who also writes, "This is not a comprehensive representation of the events of the evening. These are just a couple of photos," which he also posts, "to ensure that this year's Take Back the Night is publicly documented in some way." Well, thanks for that report back, Josh.
And of course, check out indiebay.org/Santa Cruz to view those photos and many other stories from around the Santa Cruz community. Stand by, we have Diane Patterson waiting in the wings.
I am a woman strong. I've always known how to get along. Who would have thought those sick days could send me back so far? Now it's me and this mess I've fallen in. A holy days come and go, but no soul for me. No one to call on my cage door, and empty plates are falling on my floor. And what is to be done? And what is to be done? None of a woman strong, the true tale of 25 years on a move. Who would have thought Philadelphia would dare to go so far? Now it's me and the cell walls closing in. Philly police will someday know the pain or the pain they cause today. I keep on working for my freedom. Long live Ramona Africa. What is to be done? What is to be done? And of a woman strong. Oh, 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 ooh, ooh. Another woman strong. Peaceful and brave, she locked her body down. Who would have thought those deputies would dare to harm that girl? Now there's no justice in the pepper spray trial. The court case come, the court case go, police still terrorize. She wants to free all old growth trees so that Mother Earth is free to breathe. What is to be done? What is to be done? Music maker, won't you spin a tale for me of a future present swinging in the peacetime tree? We're just a swinging, swinging, just a swinging. We're swinging in the peacetime tree, yeah.
Freak Radio, Santa Cruz, Diane Patterson. Although the file says that's called the Woman's Song, I think that's called Piece of Peace or something. Anyway, we're just about out of time here for the Indie Newswire show.
Thanks for listening every Monday from 3 to 5 p.m.
And we'll be back next Monday for another edition of Indie Newswire. Myself, DJ Bradley, and who knows what is going to happen then. In the meantime, we're going to get signed off here with one last final cut for this Memorial Day. Stiff Little Fingers with Tin Soldier. Freak Radio 101 FM.
FreakRadio.org.
Catch 22. Hey! He's your